From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Olympic TV Network refuses anti-China ad. A new scientific study reveals things you probably already knew. And school boards are in for a change. For good. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. Let's join Family Research Council President Tony Perkins as he introduces our first topic.
NBC rejected this well-produced and documented television commercial that was put together by Florida Congressman Mike Walt.
The world's greatest athletic showcase. But just outside the show, rape, genocide, slave labor. American companies are drunk on Chinese dollars, entangled with communist dictators committing atrocities and propping up these genocide games staged by the Chinese Communist Party. And what can we do?
Stand for freedom. Defund the dictators. When you see Made in China,
put it down.
Servant Leadership Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So why did NBC reject this ad? Joining me now with the answer, Congressman Mike Waltz, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, ranking member on the Subcommittee on Readiness, and a decorated Special Forces officer. He serves the 6th Congressional District of Florida. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good to be with you, Tony. Thanks.
Brilliant ad. Well done. So I've got to ask the question, why did NBC reject this ad?
Well, it's interesting. We booked the airtime with no problem to run during the Olympics. But when NBC actually saw the ad, they came back and said, well, we're not necessarily rejecting it, but we just want you to change it a lot and take out all the company logos and other material changes. So really, it was a non-rejection rejection and yet another form of censorship. And so yet NBC finds it okay to talk about the genocide that's ongoing, COVID, the Tibetans, Hong Kong, all of the other abuses in a kind of, you know, muted, soft tone. But yet when we have an ad with Inez Cantor Freedom that really calls it out and calls these companies to task, then suddenly it can't be aired.
Yeah, well, they put it in the context of alleged allegations of genocide. Yeah. And of abuse. But look, the corporate logos. I mean, isn't that the point, to call American corporations onto the carpet for propping up this communist regime?
Well, that's right. And all of these companies preach good governance, their ESG standards, you know, contribute tens of millions to social justice causes here in the United States. But when it comes to their profits abroad, they totally turn a blind eye to the COVID cover-up, to a million Muslims, Tony, that are in concentration camps, persecuting Christians, you know, forced organ harvesting. I mean, the list goes on and on of just abuses under this dictatorship. Yet they totally turn a blind eye there. NBC is completely muted, and we're gonna call them out for it. By the way, the IOC and for so many others who say, well, this is just about sports and we shouldn't politicize it, they didn't take that stance when it came to apartheid in South Africa for nearly 30 years. You know, they banned the Olympics there, banned the South African Olympic team, but yet, you know, don't do a thing or lift a finger or say a word when it comes to a mass genocide. I think the greatest since the Holocaust. And the only difference in South Africa and China is the amount of money that's involved. Meanwhile, their military buildup continues. And it's not just a human rights issue, Tony. It's a national security issue. I don't want future soldiers and sailors facing Chinese ships and tanks that were funded directly and indirectly by American dollars. Enough's enough. And the theme of our ad was, when you see Made in China, put it down. It needs to be Made in America. It's not just a national security issue. It's just a basic humanity issue.
It is. And it's a national security issue. When I want to underscore that point, because not only are these corporations, Wall Street, Hollywood, and you know, some of these same corporations that want to talk about social justice here at home have no problem with genocide in China, but American consumers. And you make that point in this ad that we can be a part of this, of stopping it, by simply, if it's made in China, put it down. Don't buy it.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. I don't trust these CEOs as far as I can throw them. They selectively get involved in causes. You see, Airbnb is also supporting the boycott and divestiture movement against Israel, right? But yet, yet they have, they're actually having houses in Xinjiang where slavery is going on. Nike gets its cotton from modern day slave-run cotton fields that are at the end of the barrel of the gun of the Chinese Communist Party. Coca-Cola gets its sugar from there. I mean, it's just total hypocrisy. And we're going to do everything we can to call them out on it. But I think the American people have to start voting with their wallets. And that's the only way you're going to get these corporate CEOs' attention.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next for the ad? NBC's turned it down. What do you do with it next?
Well, I mean, the NBC, you know, attempted censorship has actually just put the thing on steroids. It's gone viral on social media. A lot of folks are picking it up. And Tony, I just got a note from one of my staff that was in a diner in North Florida. The person at the table next to her asked that the Olympics be turned on, and the waitress said, "We don't support genocide in this establishment." So the American people have a conscience. They know what's going on. And again, you know, we talk about defunding all kinds of things. The left wants to defund the police that's protecting our communities. Let's defund dictatorships. Let's defund our greatest adversary. And that's my call to action. Again, you know, defund the dictators. When you see Made in China, put it down. It needs to say Made in America.
Congressman Mike Waltz, well done. I commend you for your leadership on this. You've been on this from the beginning, and you've followed it through, and I know you'll stay on it. Thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, stick with us. More Washington Watch on the other side of the break. You don't want to miss my next interview. Stick with us.
Do you find it challenging to stick to reading God's Word daily? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. The Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan takes you through the Bible so that you can stay grounded in God's truth. Start this adventure today with FRC. When you sign up, we text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there at the website. Contact information for our guests. You can follow up if you'd like more information about the topics that we cover. You can also email me, tony@tonyperkins.com. Love to hear from you. Over the past year, the Biden administration has been on an unrelenting crusade to get the COVID shot in the arms of every man, woman, and child in America, all the while completely downplaying, if not ignoring, natural immunity. And even when confronted about it directly, administration officials have shrugged it off. Here's what the president's chief medical advisor had to say when last September he was asked about whether those who had COVID and recovered should still get the shot, even when natural immunity may provide better protection than vaccines alone.
I think that is something that we need to sit down and discuss seriously, because you very appropriately pointed out it is an issue, and there could be an argument for saying what you said.
Well, it's been about 5 months since that interview, and I'm still waiting for Mr. Fauci to sit down. Well, fortunately, medical experts have not waited for Mr. Fauci and his funding to look at natural immunity. A new study was published last Thursday that looks at this important aspect of fighting the COVID virus. Joining me now to talk about what he and his team found in this new study is Dr. Marty McCary, professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and School of Public Health. Dr. McCary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you again, Tony.
All right, let's get straight to it. Can you tell us about your study and what you and your team found?
Sure. Well, what we found is that if you had a positive COVID test in the past, then you had a 99.3% chance of having circulating antibodies against COVID. And those antibodies were present up to 20 months, nearly 2 years after the infection, because that's as long as the infection's been around. So what we found is that natural immunity is real. It was relatively stable over time, unlike vaccinated generated antibodies. And we also found that you can operationalize this by simply giving credit to those who had a positive COVID test in the past. That's what Israel's doing. That's what European countries are doing. Any scientist who's honest, who has retained their objectivity, is now recognizing natural immunity as a powerful form of immunity. We don't want people to try to get the infection, but if you had it and recovered, that is solid protection. And that's why we recommend 0, 1, or maybe 2 vaccine doses in people with natural immunity, depending on their risk level. They certainly need a booster.
All right, so several questions for you, Dr. McCary. First off, isn't that kind of normal? I mean, when we look at a virus like this, do we not factor in natural immunity as a part of our approach to kind of boxing in that virus?
Every virus is different, but with most viruses, the immune system works to prevent reinfection. That's why the CDC's website says, don't get the chickenpox vaccine if you had chickenpox, because you've got natural immunity. The other 2 coronaviruses that caused serious illness in humans besides COVID were SARS and MERS. Both gave long-term natural immunity when they were studied.
So, I mean, I would think the default position would be, let's take a look at this and see if, in fact, it works. That way, we've got a limited amount of vaccines. And if we know that those who've had it are going to have a certain level of protection based upon what we've seen in the past, we can use that limited supply to get to people who really need it and are at a higher risk. Would that not be an appropriate approach?
Well, that's the exact approach we should have taken, and the approach many of us advocated for until we were blue in the face. I mean, I wrote almost 50 op-eds during this entire pandemic, and many of them, you know, pleaded with public health officials to listen to other opinions. There was so much of a concentration of power. A small group of doctors in the government who were politically charged or appointed were making all the decisions, and they were like-minded, and they were not listening. That's the broader story. If they would have listened to us about natural immunity and started with the right starting hypothesis that it works instead of the skeptical hypothesis saying that it doesn't, then we could have saved tens of thousands of more lives by allocating the scarce vaccine supply more rationally back when we had a very scarce supply. And we wouldn't have ruined all these lives, these nurses who've been fired with natural immunity for not being vaccinated, soldiers dishonorably discharged. We have ruined so many lives for no good scientific reason, and we're still seeing the dismissal of natural immunity, pushing boosters and young people and other policies that are scientifically irrational, but people hold on to them because this is now a political bandwagon that public health officials got started.
You mentioned you've written a number of op-eds. I'm just reading one that came out last week, where you wrote that the National Institutes of Health repeatedly has dismissed natural immunity by arguing that its duration is unknown, but then failing to conduct studies to answer that question. So they said, well, we don't know, so we can't really say if natural immunity works, but they never studied it. Why? Given the fact that's been a factor in the past, why didn't they study it?
Well, I would suggest that they don't want to know the results because, look, the study that I did out of Johns Hopkins with my research team that was published last week in our number one medical journal, the Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA, gave the results that many of us have been postulating the whole time, and all this research that's been done between the early days of the pandemic when they tried to challenge rhesus monkeys with the virus after infection and found they did not get reinfected, to the bedside observation that people who are healthy and get reinfected don't get severely ill. They're not on ventilators, with ultra-rare exceptions. And all of the data that has come in, the Cleveland Clinic, Washington University, over 140 studies documented by the Brownstone Institute. Why am I doing this study when the NIH has $42 billion and could have done this study instantly. And I think what you have is a loss of scientific objectivity. The science is now heavily curated, and even the CDC's own study on natural immunity, which came out 2 weeks ago, showed natural immunity was three times more protective than vaccinated immunity in protecting against hospitalization. Yet the conclusion they wrote fit their predetermined narrative, and it's read that vaccination is still the safest strategy. That's not what the data shows. That's what I recommend for people who haven't had the infection, but that's not what their data shows. They buried the lead of their own story, and it speaks to this agenda. We have the most political FDA and CDC in U.S. history.
Yeah, and so they have not changed their mandates and their approach to this. But I want to go, and I know you speak you know, what the science says, and this is kind of a political question, so you may not want to address it, although I think you probably will. Is there a structural flaw in the fact that these policies that we've seen that have been put forth by the administration, recommended by NIH and NIAID, that they, you know, they're the ones that are telling, they're the chief advisors to the president of the administration, but they're also the ones providing grants and funding to many of the researchers and medical experts that might do research that would challenge their policies. Is there a structural flaw in what's happening in Washington?
Yes, and that is only people who are like-minded are invited to be a part of the discussion. And we, of course, now have from an email that came out from a FOIA request that an opposing view early on in the pandemic, which was the view of Jay Bhattacharya and other colleagues I know nationally who have been spot on and they've been vindicated, that the NIH director called for a quote-unquote devastating takedown of their ideas. And instead, they just talk among themselves. I can tell you there have been private high-level meetings among public health officials in the last few weeks because they invite in some experts, and you know I'm friends with people nationwide in this area. And they have these discussions, and they're living in their own bubble. They're not even thinking about an exit of the pandemic. They're not thinking about exit criteria. They had a sort of small vote among some of their experts about whether or not they should recognize natural immunity. The vote was split, and they decided not to recognize it. This should not be an oligarchy. This should be an open scientific debate instead of discrediting those who give different opinions.
I mean, I thought it was all about following the science, and it now is made very clear, it's become very, very clear that as we have pursued policies related to COVID-19, it hasn't been the science. Now, I'm sure it factored in at some point, but it looks like it's more the politics than it is the science.
Well, this is why two of the most respected high-level FDA officials last year, including the head of the Vaccine Center at the FDA, quit in protest over political interference from the White House over vaccines, specifically boosters in young people. And they didn't keep their ideas a secret. They wrote a lot in the medical journals and even in the Washington Post about this sort of new world of making a decision and then trying to find science to fit it. You know, if you look at the data on boosters out of Israel, in old people, or older people, I should say, there was a reduction in hospitalization. And so for people who haven't had natural immunity, I recommend boosters in folks over 65. But Dr. Fauci immediately saw that data and said, this is dramatic data, wrote up a lot of policy, and then around the same time, the same Israeli population data came out on natural immunity, and he ignored it. Even though it showed natural immunity was 27 times more protective, didn't say a word. You cannot cherry pick the science. And that's unfortunately what we're seeing now with our government doctors. The good news is people see through it. They're listening to their local doctor, and they're not listening to the government doctors.
All right, Dr. McCary, I want to switch a little bit and focus on, all right, what do we do now that we know this? And I go back to your op-ed, your piece that you wrote last week, and you're calling on businesses and others to correct the actions that they took. You point actually to some companies like Starbucks and others that are calling back employees that they fired because they wouldn't get the vaccine. So you made reference to this earlier, a lot of good people, doctors, nurses, first responders, members of the military, you know, they're owed an apology and we should bring them back.
That's right. It's time to bring back workers. It's time to get back to work. There's a small group of Americans, maybe 5 million, who are at risk of COVID. They haven't had natural immunity and they haven't had vaccinated immunity. I doubt they're going to get vaccinated now, although I'd encourage it for them. But we can't hold up the rest of society because of that small holdout. And those people are still at risk and they still come to the hospital. But 95% of the country is either immune or low risk. And we've got to move on. People have lost the human connection. Communities, churches, workplaces, our doctors' conferences have not been meeting. We have not been talking about medical advances. We've got to get back to working, and that means hiring people back with an apology. The calculus is different. Population immunity is higher. And so we've got to get back to a normal existence. And that's what you're starting to see. People are pushing back against the politicians, different parts of the country, and they're saying, we need normalcy.
We do, Dr. McCary, because, you know, we've had three variants and there's many other variants out there, but we've had three major in this country and there's probably going to be another one. And so we just have to learn how to live with it and deal with it just as we have the flu.
That's right. We've got to look, 10 to 20% of the U.S. population gets infected with a respiratory pathogen every year and has for centuries. Okay. That doesn't mean we stop living. It doesn't mean we shut down schools and cover the faces of kids with cloth masks. It means we use common sense, which is basic hygiene. If you are sick, stay home, avoid others. And if you've been around someone who's vulnerable, be careful. So we've got to get back to some basic principles because we are going to have variants in the future, and we've got to learn to live with them. The good news is statistically they will be milder. And it's tough to outperform Omicron because it was so contagious.
Well, Dr. McCary, I want to thank you for joining us. And I want to thank you for your work that you took this on while the government had all the money to do it. They didn't want to do it. You did it. And it has added tremendously to the discussion and the debate. And we're grateful for it.
Good to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
You can find out more about Dr. McCary's Johns Hopkins study when you head over to TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Religious freedom is the freedom to hold religious beliefs of one's choice and to live according to those beliefs. So, why should you care about it? At Family Research Council, we care about religious freedom internationally because we believe it is an essential human right that all governments have an obligation to protect. Go to frc.org/IRF to check out Family Research Council's latest resources on international religious freedom and learn what steps you can take to help the cause of the persecuted.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As we saw in Virginia last year, it is critical for good people everywhere to be involved in their local school board. And this past week, FRC Action held candidate training for those who want to get involved in that way. Joining Tony Perkins on Thursday to discuss those trainings was FRC's Vice President for the Association of Churches and Ministries, Dr. Mark Harris.
Mark, welcome back to the program.
Well, Tony, it's great to be with you.
All right, tell us how the event went today, some of the highlights.
Well, I would say that as I've listened a little bit to the program today, I think the running theme of everything today would maybe be what you've said several times. Folks have just decided enough is enough. And we saw that happening right here today as folks came to the school board boot camp, candidates that are interested, people who are genuinely praying about whether or not to take the plunge and get involved. It was an incredible day. We saw more than 100 folks that had registered and came in this morning. And it was just amazing to see. Just highlights throughout the day, I think, included, of course, as the worldview information was presented and what a critical role that plays. Candidates, again, were given great information of issues that they needed to be able to speak about when they're out there on the stump, when they're out there knocking on doors, meeting voters. And I really believe that folks left here today better equipped than they even imagined that they might be before they came here. And I would probably say the highlight for me was today with these folks all gathered here when they mentioned at one part of the program today, listen, all of those of you that are seriously believe you are going to run for office, we want you to get up and we want you to come right here to the front. And we saw probably 75% of the people that were in the pew stood up and came to the front, making that kind of commitment that they were ready to get on board and ready to do something. So it was been an exciting day.
Well, Mark, you're certainly no political novice. You've been a candidate for office. You've been involved in the political realm in addition to pastoring. Have you seen this type of energy and commitment at this level before?
Not so much. I mean, I think we've seen grassroots organized before, but this is almost like the Tea Party movement on steroids. We saw a lot of things that people were involved in 2010, obviously, the backlash, if you will, to what was happening with Obamacare and the government overreach. But I think the thing that we've seen happen this time, particularly when it came to the children and parents beginning to open their eyes to what was happening in the schools, I mean, it's almost kind of like the perfect storm. When COVID hit, so many of the schools shut down. They tried to go to the virtual learning. And I think parents, whether they were forced to or for whatever reason, suddenly opened their eyes and became aware of what was coming out and what was happening through the education their children were receiving, and then really what their children were not receiving.
Right.
And I think it just really raised the bar, and parents are demanding something different now.
Well, and we appreciate your example, Dr. Mark Harris, for leading the way as well. And we encourage pastors to check out the Association of Church Ministries.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.